This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio, and have I got a deal for you? How about a two-floor, five-bedroom bungalow with an open-air balcony and a covered porch, just asking $1,700? Or a Spanish-style villa, four bedrooms, a terrace, a solarium, $1,900. The catch? You're going to have to make it yourself. You still interested? Well, then you're going to need a catalog from Sears from the early 20th century to help you find the house. From 1908 to 1940, houses were among the mail-order offerings from Sears. The department store chain sold do-it-yourself kits of lumber, roofing, siding, and glass, as well as paint, to Americans at affordable prices. More than 70,000 Sears catalog homes were bought and built across the country. Many of them made their way by train to North Carolina, and a lot of them are still standing. Rosemary Thornton is on a mission to locate as many as she can. She's an expert on the history of Sears kit homes, and she is my guest on the program today. Rosemary, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Tell us the story. You were working as a freelance writer, right? An editor assigned you an article on kit homes in Illinois somewhere, and you're off to the races.
Yeah, I was a freelance writer for years and years, and I've always loved old houses and had a background in real estate and had a pretty diverse career background, as many baby boomers do. And I was asked to write this article about the 150 Sears homes in a 12-block area in Carlinville, Illinois. And I went there to write the article like any good freelancer. I was trying to get it done very quickly to get my paycheck. And I completely fell in love with the topic. The idea that you could order a 12,000-piece kit out of the Sears and Roebuck catalog, and the language that accompanied these kits just was enchanting. Completely charming. Sears promised a man of average abilities could have the house assembled and ready for occupancy in 90 days, which wow. Probably turned out to be a little bit ambitious. Yeah. There were just so many facets. I mean, today we look at putting together an entertainment center and we break out in a sweat. Right. Can you imagine 12,000 pieces? And this was packed in a boxcar with the only way I can describe it is like a 3D jigsaw puzzle. There was not space left to put in a piece of paper. So you'd order your house, you'd send in a $1 good faith deposit to Sears and Roebuck, and they would, by return mail, send you a complete inventory of all the pieces and parts that would come with your Sears house. Also included the blueprints. If you liked what you saw, you would send in the balance of your money to Sears, and they would ship you that boxcar full of house. And I've talked to a few people actually bought and built a Sears kit of their home. And there were virtually no mistakes found in these orders.
Really?
I mean, you got to think about somebody walking through the lumber mill or the hardware department and selecting all the doorknobs and the coat hooks and the paint and the varnish and the roofing shingles and the gutters and the downspouts and, missing a thing.
Wow.
And this was before computers and before all the aids that we have now to making sure there, you know, our inventory is in order.
So what do? You get to the train depot and there's a boxcar full of your house, but you got to get it to your lot.
Yeah, that's one of the things where it was really useful. I wrote the first book on this topic in 2002, and it was really helpful to actually have people contact me and say, listen, let me tell you about my story. So I got to talk to people. In fact, one was a 95-year-old man that I interviewed. It was fascinating. But your boxcar would come in, and the boxcars were bigger than they were, you know, they were bigger in the 20s than they are today, and it would be put on a siding. You had 48 hours to unload 12,000 pieces of house into your little Model T truck or a horse-drawn wagon, and that's why Sears homes are typically found within 1 to 2 miles of railroad tracks.
There you go.
Just the logistics of getting
right.
this, and it would take several trips back and forth, back and forth from the train station to your site, and you didn't have time to set anything up. You would just take the truck or the car, or rather the horse-drawn wagon or whatever, and just dump all this building material at the site and, you know, run back for the next load. But yeah, it took a lot of trips
There's
back and forth.
There's some beautiful design. Too. These houses look great. You've taken a lot of pictures.
I have. There was a real myriad of designs. At the bottom, you have a $500 house, which was two bedrooms, no bath, kind of a kitchen. And at the other end of the spectrum was the Sears Magnolia, the creme de la creme of all Sears homes. $5,948, 2,900 square feet, offered from 1918 to 1922.
Wow. And talk about the people who you talked to who actually built the homes. I mean, were they difficult? I mean, it had to be difficult, but were there people who just gave up? What's the proportion of houses that were ordered and never built?
Well, about 50% of the time, people would hire a carpenter to come in and build the house. About 50% of the time, they would actually build it themselves. And, you know, again, I'm a big fan of history. You got to look back at the way things were in the early 1900s. Most people would have the skills, or not most, but many people would have the skills to build a log cabin, to build primitive housing if they were found out in the elements. You know, to look at it today, as I said, you know, I mean, if you couldn't even – the Sears how-to manual was 75 pages, and today we'd have 432 pages just of lawyerly warnings about how to not, you know, drive a nail through your palm or something. So it really was a very different world. But, yeah, people took this on with gratitude. And this is another little piece of the history that's so fascinating. Disproportionately, a lot of people who built these houses were immigrants and men and women of color and fresh immigrants to this country and people who didn't have a chance of becoming a homeowner without Sears. And, you know, we talk about the fair lending laws we have today. In the 1910s and 20s, redlining was the order of the day. If you didn't have the right address, the right last name, the right connections, you did not get a mortgage. And Sears offered full mortgages on these houses. You only had to own the lot. And they had one question on the financial application: what is your vocation? If you had a skill, you got a mortgage.
Got a mortgage. And you keep in mind, I mean, you know, you're talking about 1908. Around then, $1,700, a lot of money. You would have to finance that.
If you do the math, say the Magnolia for $5,948, by today's standards, that would probably be around $70,000 to $80,000. Oh, really? So it wasn't – it was still a better deal. I mean, we've seen the inflation of housing just in the last 20, 30 years. Right. I mean, my parents bought a house in 1957, a beautiful home in a nice area, paid $17,000. So, yeah, housing has really risen disproportionately to all other, you know,
indices. And I'm guessing the quality of material, 2x4s were 2 inches by 4 inches, for instance.
That's one of the misnomers that drives me to drink is people think they're crappy little houses, but they were not. They were the lumber yards were actually in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and they had a big mill in Cairo, Illinois, and the lumber came out of the southern forests, number one southern yellow pine out of virgin forests where the trees grow naturally and slowly, competing for oxygen. So it's a very dense wood, and those were the framing members, and the exteriors were all cypress. So these homes really were a quality of building material we will never see again in this country. No. I mean, Weyerhaeuser brags they can have a tree ready for harvest in 25 years. And I don't know if you've felt the weight of a 2x4 lately at the local hardware store, but they're pretty darn light.
And the house that they build will last almost that long. Magnolia, you talked about that one, and that was the big. So they didn't sell a lot of those, right?
Only 7 known Magnolias in the entire country. So I was hoping against hope to find one in Durham. That didn't happen, but you do have one in Benson, which is remarkable. I think that I'm not sure how far we are from Benson's. I think it's about an hour south of Raleigh. But the Magnolia you have in Benson, oh my goodness, I went down there and fawned over it and stared at it and sat in the front yard and, you know, talked to it for quite a while. But it's an extraordinary house.
So tell us now, once you develop this obsession, and clearly it is, you're looking for these houses. How does that go? Do you go knock on people's doors? And what do you do?
Well, I used to. I had one guy enter the door. It was kind of a crummy house in a crummy part of town and kind of a sad part of the country. And he knocked on the door, and he was a ruffian, to say the least. And he had a chainsaw in his hand, which was worrisome. And he said, "Hey, honey, you want to come down to the basement? I can show you all the marked lumber you want to see." And I thought, no, I'll take a pass on that. So I've kind of, you know, scaled back on the knocking on doors thing. That guy really, you know, took about 10 years off my life. But also, it slows me down. You know, I can fly through town and identify these houses.
You stand out there and take pictures? People worry about what you're doing?
Yeah, but I take a picture, and I always make sure the engine's running and the window's down so I can kind of goose it and take off while they're – sometimes people run after me. I did have a very interesting fellow chase me down in a car and cut me off on a street. And it really was a very poor part of – a crummy part of town where I probably should not have been taking pictures. Yeah. But he scared me a lot. He scared me more than the chainsaw guy. So I've really developed a skill of what we call affectionately the drive-by shooting, where you just kind of snap and run. And, you know, nobody stops you.
What got Sears into this business in the first place?
Well, Richard Warren Sears is one of my heroes in American history, and that's one of the reasons the Sears homes are such an incredible piece of our history. It's American merchandising. It's the rugged individualist. It's do-it-yourself. Can you imagine the boldness of having a boxcar full of lumber arrive at a site and say, I'm going to turn that into a house.
With a dollar down payment, right?
With a $1 good faith deposit. Yeah. And then you had to pay the balance upon delivery of the house. But the reason Richard Warren Sears did this was he knew it was a way to sell more of the stuff in his 100,000-item, 1,400-page catalog, which he bragged he had the largest publishing company in America at the time for all the catalogs that he ran. And the paper that he ran through his printing presses once a year was enough to go around the equator 4 times.
There you go.
The Sears catalog was a big deal back in the day, but he knew it was a way to sell more items.
But the idea of actually filling a boxcar, why did they think that would work? Was there something in the market, or just that's the one thing that wasn't in the catalog yet, so they put it in?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure. Aladdin actually started selling kit homes in 1906.
We should point that out, that Sears, while they're sort of famous for this, if you know anything about kit houses, you think Sears, but there was actually another company, Aladdin.
There were actually 7 companies doing it on a national level. Aladdin was actually the largest starting in 1906. The Sovereign Brothers started this in Bay City, Michigan, and were very successful. And one of the beauty parts about Sears is they were not leaders in anything, but they looked at what was successful and they emulated it. Sears became a multimillionaire off the sewing machine and the cream separator. Obviously, he didn't invent those, but he figured out a way to make them cheap. And he sold the sewing machine for under $10 and the cream separator for under $20. And apparently, everybody in America needed either a cream separator or a sewing machine or both. And the same was with houses. He did not innovate designs. He didn't innovate the idea. He looked at what was successful and he copied it. And he did it very well.
And the financing. You talked about that one question. That's because Sears was actually holding the mortgages on some of these places.
Yes. And interestingly, a condition of the mortgage was that you had to have the house ready for occupancy in 4 months or you would lose the mortgage. So that probably inspired people to get out there even in the rainy weather and get that thing finished.
Why is that now? Why would that matter to Sears if I've got you paying for it? What do I care if you're living there?
Because of the mortgage, they wanted an insurable interest or a protected interest. They didn't want to be holding a mortgage on a half-done house for 3 years.
That's right. You wouldn't be able to sell it for much. So these houses are built on the wood itself. Are they just 2x4s or are there fittings? Are they notched?
No, they're all the Sears homes after 1920, they all came pre-cut. So there was no sawing needed, which was also a tremendous time saver. The circular saw that we all know and love today actually didn't come into mass use until 1925. So if you're building a house yourself, it was estimated it took 4,000 cuts with a handsaw. So having the lumber arrive pre-cut was an enormous savings in labor and time. The pre-cut homes were notched and ready to be nailed into place.
There was a big mill in Wilmington, wasn't there?
Yes, Aladdin had a massive mill in Wilmington, which is why I believe that we found so many kit homes in North Carolina, Aladdin kit homes, that is. I'm from Norfolk, Virginia, and we've got an abundance of Aladdin really in this part of the country, and it's probably because they had one of their largest mills in Wilmington.
And there wasn't, the total cost included the shipping, right?
Everything.
That was the boxcar.
750 pounds of nails, 27 gallons of paint and varnish, 72 coat hooks. Let's see, what else? 10 pounds of wood putty. I could go on.
Wow. So it's a lot. Do most people know they're living in a kit home?
That's a really interesting facet of this. Based on my research, about 90% of the people living in these houses didn't realize what they had until either I knocked on their door, and more frequently now, just send them a note. And people love it. I send the original catalog page and say, I think you may have a Sears home. And it really helps people understand the historical significance of their home.
The designs are great. We talked about the Magnolia. The Alhambra was another gorgeous design.
Yes, and you have one on Hermitage Court, a beauty.
You said you saw a number just driving in today to our studio here in Durham.
Yes, I did. You've got one on Inglewood, on Onslow, North Duke, Glendale, West Club, Virginia Avenue, and Shepherd Street. So those are some of the streets where we found them.
Now, how can you tell from the outside it's a Sears? Is it just by the design?
It's by the design. Sears offered 370 models. Aladdin offered, for this time period, the 20s, more than 100. And when I decided Sears Homes would be my life, which they were for about 10 years, I didn't do anything but Sears Homes, I endeavored to memorize the 370 designs. So now I can just drive down the street and say, stop the car. It's a Alhambra.
Do people tend to mess with them? Do they make a lot of improvements so that they'd be unrecognizable?
That's one of the reasons I do this gig, and I have a blog where I daily post a model and show pictures and everything, is because these homes, some of these homes are in more modest neighborhoods that have been subjected to blight and other problems, and sometimes they get remodeled beyond recognition. Mm. And these houses are a really important piece of our history and our culture, and they need to be preserved and protected.
Now, some of them seem to have been brick design,
yes.
Right?
So you could get brick, stone, cedar siding, clapboard, you could get pretty, well, not anything you wanted. If you ordered masonry, the masonry you supply, that was not included with a kit, and mainly because of cost of freight.
Right, right. But then you'd also have to know a little bit about bricklaying, which could be,
yes.
that's a whole
or
other.
Or hire a bricklayer.
Yeah, the Phoenix was not my favorite design. I have to say, that was a brick. But the rest of them were gorgeous. Now, they went out of business, what, 1940, right?
1940 was their last year.
What happened?
It was a lot of things. Housing was becoming increasingly complicated. Instead of just one bathroom, people wanted two bathrooms or more. And another thing was electricity. When these homes started, if you had a house wired for electricity, you were in a truly modern home. And a house wired for electricity had a single bulb hanging in the kitchen with, and if you wanted to plug in your waffle iron, you unscrewed the light bulb and screwed in an adapter so you could run your waffle iron. So housing became increasingly complex. People wanted lights in every room. They wanted electric outlets in the room. Also, housing codes became more stringent. So it was really the perfect storm of events. And also, of course, sales plummeted after the Great Depression. In 1930, the Wall Street Journal reported housing starts were down 40%, which was probably not unlike we've seen in the last couple of years. But so housing starts down, housing becoming increasingly complicated, and also FHA. Sears got out of the mortgage business. FHA started in 1935. So it was a lot of things came together.
And you said one of the things that helped propel the boom in kit homes was the post-World War I, ethic about or feeling that, home ownership was a good idea.
Yes. After the Great War ended, the war to end all wars, we were told, in 1918, there was a housing shortage of 1 to 2 million units. And it was strongly believed that it was your patriotic duty to get into a home of your own. And it was also strongly believed that homeowners created better families, had more stability, and better families lived in a home of their own. And if you had a home of your own, there was more stability in the community and by extension, the whole city. And look at It's a Wonderful Life with George Bailey. At its core, I believe that movie's really about home ownership, because when he goes back to Pottersville and it's all rental property, it's all bad news. And Ernie's wife, the cab driver, his wife ran off 3 years ago and took the kid because he's in Pottersville and he's in a rental house. Whereas what George Bailey did was he turned the community into a community of homeowners. And that's really what Sears, I consider to be the George Bailey of our country. They opened the door for countless families to enjoy that financial stability of having a home of their own.
So what do people do now if they think they might? How do you know if you're living in a kit home?
Well, the lumber was marked to facilitate construction. So there was a letter and a three-digit number about 7/8 of an inch tall on the end of the lumber. So I advise everybody, stop what you're doing, run down to the basement or the crawl space and see if you have any marked lumber. And if you do, it could be a Sears home, it could be an Aladdin, it could be from any of these other companies as well. But that's really the fastest way to tell.
And then go to your website.
And go to my website,
see
heck
all
yeah.
Kinds of, all kinds of pictures. why don't they do this? It seems to me they could take a tip from computer makers and then they could design a home with fittings that only work for appliances that they sell.
Hmm.
Wouldn't that be a great idea?
That's an interesting idea. I don't know what to think of that. I know that Lowe's sells something called the Katrina Cottage, which is interesting. We've kind of, the McMansion craze was, I guess, the 80s and the early 90s. And now we have the Katrina Cottages, which are 500 to 700 square foot houses. We have the tiny houses kind of growing in popularity. So we've kind of come full circle back to the little 700 square foot bungalows for $1,500 offered out of the Sears catalog.
We could go in business together. Let's do it. Rose, thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Rosemary Thornton, the author of The Houses That Sears Built. She's also the founder of the website searshomes.org. You can find out more information about kit homes. Tomorrow, Rose is going to be at a reception at the Raleigh City Museum from 6 to 9 p.m. She's going to give a talk. She's going to sign copies of her book at the Rialto Theater in Raleigh at 1:30 on Saturday. Sponsored by the Raleigh Historic Development Commission, and you can find out more about them at rhdc.org. Just ahead, a classic black feminist work comes to the stage at Burning Coal Theater in Raleigh. Stay with us.